Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Wednesday, the 9th of January. And we are going to be talking about the New Hampshire primary, the first hour of our program today, and the surprising win by Hillary Rodham Clinton, Senator Clinton, who won that race. And what the heck happened with all these polls? Do we just not listen to polls anymore? Because everybody was way off on this. How did she pull it off? We'll be speaking with a Republican strategist the second half hour of this program, and I'm sure that our phone lines will be quite flooded as you respond to what happened in New Hampshire and what happens along the road from here. Our phone number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. If you're joining us in Milwaukee, it is 414-227-2050. 414-227-2050 for you to join our conversation and give us your response to New Hampshire. We are tracking down Carl Bernstein right now. He's going to be a great guest for us the first part of the program. Last time he was here, he was talking about his book, which is now out in paperback, A Woman in Charge, which is about Senator Hillary Rodham Clinton, a very thorough biography of her. He, of course, of Watergate fame. He, along with Bob Woodward, shared a Pulitzer Prize for their coverage of Watergate for the Washington Post. He's the author of All the President's Men and the Final Days, and also of His Holiness John Paul II and the History of Our Time. Loyalty is another of his book, a memoir about his parents during McCarthy-era Washington. He has written for Vanity Fair, Time USA Today, Rolling Stone, and The New Republic. He is going to be and is a CNN political correspondent during the course of this 2008 campaign. And he is with us now, and we will be taking your phone calls momentarily. Carl Bernstein, hello. Thank you so much for being with us.
Good to be with you.
So what, do we not listen to pollsters anymore? I mean, it was just incredible. Everybody was saying, oh, we're so sorry. We're so sorry we got this whole thing so wrong. How did she pull it off?
Well, let's take one thing at a time. First of all, I think you always have to be a little wary of polls. Polls are snapshots of a given moment. And particularly in the information cyclone that we live in, they can be eclipsed, and people keep moving, and polls stay still. So I think there's that element. Plus, people lie to pollsters. And
now, why would they do that?
So I think that's part of it. I think I didn't hear the beginning of when you were speaking to your listeners there, but I don't know if you talked about what this book is or not, or the fact that it's just come out in paperback with a new afterword. Did you mention that?
I mentioned it came out in paperback. I didn't know it had a new afterword.
Yeah, the paperback has a new afterword, and it just come out. And it goes to the question, I think, of what happened here. And that is that Hillary Clinton and Bill Clinton were running a campaign that looked like a restoration, and people were not responding well to it. Obama, I think, understood that people weren't responding well to the Clinton message, in addition to people responding positively to his notion of a new generation, a new approach to politics, reaching out. And the Clintons have a big problem of being saddled with the past. Yes, much of it was successful in their White House years, but I think as people got closer and closer to Election Day in those two states, I started thinking partly about the cycle of Bush-Clinton, having doubts. And at the same time, you know, you got to remember, even though Hillary Clinton won this thing in New Hampshire, 53% of the Democrats voted against her.
Mm-hmm.
Because most of those Edwards votes would likely go to Obama rather than Clinton.
What did she mean when she used this phrase, and I know this is the substance of your book as well, when she said she listened to New Hampshire and she found her voice? Did she find something new here?
I think she found a new phrase.
Yeah, I think you're right.
I think you got to be very skeptical about overanalyzing. One of the things that we've got here is that we're also riding a wave of media analysis that gives a certain urgency to every word and every phrase and every, you know, we're looking for body language here. I think we got to stick a little bit more with sort of the mega picture. And the mega picture, to me, is who Hillary Clinton is. And I think more and more we're going to need to look to biography of both of these candidates to look for answers. Because as people learn more and more and get past the body language, as it were, I think that their decision-making is going to have much more to do with what lies underneath about these individuals.
You know, and people have said that they don't know her. That one of the last paragraphs in your book, you talk about the fact that she wants to have this dialogue with everybody, but what she serves up for public consumption, you write, especially since setting her sights on the Senate and the presidency, is usually elaborately prepared or relatively soulless. This is the true shame. I think I started to see a little bit of change in that soullessness as the campaign went on in New Hampshire.
I think that's right. I think that what happened is that she indeed became a woman in charge of her own campaign, which she has not been to some extent. She's been listening to other people, particularly to Bill Clinton, particularly to Mark Penn, who was put in there by Bill Clinton. And among other things, she's one of the things she has got to figure in her calculations here is how to make Bill Clinton an asset. Up till now, she's been running as if this were a restoration. You know, I don't think people are taken very well to that restoration theme that lies underneath, because the restoration implies a lot of the so-called circus of the Clinton years, and I don't necessarily mean, you know, Monica Lewinsky, but this kind of national out-of-body experience that we have all been through with Bill and Hillary Clinton, however talented they are. I think, you know, that she is saddled with the fact that Bill Clinton, the administrations of Bill Clinton and George Bush, as diametrically opposed as they are both looked at in terms of certain dynamics, and Obama comes outside of those dynamics.
Yeah,
She's got to work against that.
Right. Let's talk about this this female vote. My husband was saying last night as we were watching this, you know, we got a gender war on our hands now in this country. She won big among women. She didn't do that in Iowa. Obama took female vote in Iowa. How did she get so many women to vote for her? And is this where she's going to find her strength as she goes along?
You're a woman. You're probably better able to answer that than myself.
I'm not sure I can answer it.
But I'm not. Again, I beware of overanalysis. And I think though that there are a few keys in things she said in the last few days, beginning in Iowa. The first thing she did, the line that nobody noticed in her speech in Iowa after she had lost, was she said, "I'm running this campaign," and that's what happened. And there's a big change. The second thing is that in the debate in New Hampshire, she said, "I'm running as a woman for president." That's the first time she's really said that.
Yeah, right.
And I think that the idea that a woman would bring a different sensibility to the presidency than a man may be a real asset. Look, we've screwed it up, the guys. Presidency after presidency in many regards. And this might really, there's a very interesting piece in yesterday's New York Times, an op-ed piece by Gloria Steinem,
yeah,
about why she's supporting Hillary as opposed to Obama. And it has to do with gender. I don't think this is about a gender war, though. That I don't buy.
Mm-hmm.
But I do think that more and more we are likely to see her say it's time that that some of the values that women perhaps hold more dearly than men ought to be part of our national life.
Yeah. You talked about the, and you quote somebody in the book, of people not being sure they want the circus back in town. Can you talk a little bit about more about that? I mean, we went through a lot with the Clintons, you know, with all of the women, with all the attacks on them. What kind of circus were you talking about? And do you think there would be another circus back in town? And what form would it take?
It's a quote from someone else, but
right.
I think it's a fascinating quote because it's a quote from somebody who Hillary has gone to for political advice, and as close as this person is to the Clintons, even this person says, you know, she stands for good things. I'm not sure I want the circus back in town.
Yeah.
And I think what it refers to is the psychodrama of that attends the Clintons, going back to the Arkansas years, and certainly in the White House years. You know, one of the things that happened in Iowa is this dynamic between Bill and Hillary Clinton, and I think it's one of the reasons that she lost in Iowa, and that is that that Bill Clinton, for all his popularity and all his rock star status and all the affection in which he's held by great numbers of Democrats and others as well, can also be a drag, can be baggage, because she finds it hard to run as her own person.
Right.
And so this very delicate balance is something that, and when he's out in front, there is a reminder, particularly when he say, you know, Bill Clinton said some really outrageous things in the last few days.
He sure has.
Donna Brazile said some interesting things on CNN last night about Clinton and his lecturing Obama and talking about this being a fairy tale and,
right.
and that Obama's a kid. You know, Obama's first of all the same age that Bill Clinton is when he ran for the presidency. You know, one of the interesting differences between Bill and Hillary Clinton is Hillary is somebody who's had real life experience outside of politics. She's had jobs. She is a kind of person that gets, you know, that she worked in a canning factory, spooning the guts out of king salmon in Alaska one summer when she was in college. She's babysat for migrant workers. She's worked as a lawyer, as a children's advocate. She was in school plays. A very different approach to life than Bill Clinton, who approaches life as an intellectual primarily, and as a politician, meaning the intellectual component being acting on received wisdom as opposed to really being out there and doing things. And so for Bill Clinton to be talking about people's experience, Obama's had a lot more real-life experience in many ways than Bill Clinton has. Not as a politician, perhaps, but he's been a community organizer. I think everybody was amazed at some of the things that Bill, the petulance of what an awful lot of Bill Clinton was saying, and I think it really hurt her. And I think she was able to speak louder than he was, perhaps, in New Hampshire.
Yeah,
and drown some of that out. But I think we're going to see a lot less of that.
I'm going to be real general with this comment, but it's sort of gossipy, but I'll use it anyhow. I grew up in the Chicago suburbs area, and I know
I can tell from your voice.
Can you really?
Yes.
That's funny. And I know several people who were in the same class as Hillary Clinton at Maine. And to a person, they all say the same thing about her, Carl. And I know that you've talked to a lot of people and you know this whole part of her life. But it seems to me as though some of who we are gets formed fairly early. And they all said she was really smart, really, really smart, but nobody liked her.
I don't believe that. I think that's hindsight. I simply don't think that's the case. I think she had a circle of friends at Maine East and Maine South High School. She was not the homecoming queen, but I think that there was a kind of standoffishness about her.
Right.
But disliked? No, I just don't think that. There are some people in high school, maybe a little less through college, who found her aloof and wasn't helped by the fact that she was a young girl who wore these glasses and was somewhat awkward because of that and the thickness of the glasses. But I don't buy that. But what we're talking about interests me in the following way, that I think more and more, you know, when I think about it, you know, if we had had real biography of George Bush in the year 2000, I don't think that Bush would be president. That if people, including journalists, had really gotten beneath the surface and looked at the person's life, he wouldn't have made it to the presidency. And I think in this election particularly, the notion of biography of both these candidates is and McCain and on the Republican side as well is terribly important. And there, you know, there's some good biography of Obama out there.
There's
my book, and there's another recent book about Hillary Clinton. I'm not suggesting people read only my book, though. Happily, my book has gotten these rather remarkable reviews. I think because it is a kind of fair and balanced repertorial approach. You know, what is biography and what is good journalism? It's the best obtainable version of the truth. And I spent 7 years trying, and the reason it took so long partly is because she's very difficult to get. And I was able to get to the people who mm-hmm. who had been with her through her life, closest to her, to speak on the record. Happily, I began the project long before she was, forget about running for president. You know, she was trying to redeem the Clinton reputation in the White House when I started on this, right after the impeachment of her husband. And the book opens with this remarkable scene that is indicative of who Hillary Clinton is. While her husband was being judged by the U.S. Senate, tried for high crimes and misdemeanors, at that very moment when the Chief Justice of the United States was presiding appropriately enough in these black robes he had designed for the occasion with gold epaulettes that he had taken from a Gilbert and Sullivan operetta, at the other end of Pennsylvania Avenue, in her study, she could see the Capitol building from where she was meeting with her Sven Vigali, Harold Hickey's, at that very moment when her husband was being judged. She was looking at maps in New York and deciding that she was probably going to run for the Senate from the state of New York. Well, the audacity of picking that moment, the defiance of it, is stunning. This is a stunning, you know, compelling, fascinating woman. And she hides it, partly because she really wants to control the way she's perceived.
Mm-hmm. Let's pause for a moment and we'll return and take a couple phone calls. Carl Bernstein is with us. He has written a book that is just now out in paperback with a new foreword, A Woman in Charge, which is about Senator Hillary Rodham Clinton. Our phone number is 800-486-8655. And If you're in Milwaukee, it's 414-227-2050. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. All right, let's take a couple phone calls for Carl Bernstein before we switch the conversation and look at what happened with Republicans in New Hampshire last night. Our first call is Marilyn from Madison. Hi, Marilyn.
Hi.
Hi.
Would your guest agree with me in terms of the general election, if Hillary were the candidate, would he agree that it was a mistake for her to have Madeleine Albright on the stage with her, bringing up, you know, the old days?
Oh, you know, I wrote about this just as a parenthetical thing in a piece. I would hope people go to my website, carlbernstein.com. There's excerpts from the book on it. There's a piece that I wrote, indeed, about Iowa on the website. There's, of all things, a profile, I believe it's on the website, that I wrote about John McCain in 2000. But take a look at the website. There's a lot about Hillary Clinton. I think it's a little unfair to bash Madeleine Albright. I think what happened that night is that indeed they cobbled together after she had lost. The ballroom was empty, and they brought a whole bunch of people downstairs to make it look like they had folks around. In the front row were Terry McAuliffe, the family fundraiser, and Wes Clark, the general, who supports her, and Madeleine Albright. And it was not the next generation. So was that a mistake? Yes, but the fact is she went on to win New Hampshire afterwards.
Yes, I'm just talking about the general election countrywide.
Well, I look, she is going to try. First of all, she is 60 years old, and Obama is 45. Just as I said, he's about the same age that Bill Clinton was when Clinton ran in 1992. And that's going to be obvious, but is she smart enough to know that she has to cut into Obama's support among young people? Of course she's that smart, and she'll do the necessary stagecraft, I'm sure, to make it look that way. But I think it is atmospherics.
Thanks, Marilyn, for the call. Scott is next from Green Bay. Hi, Scott. Scott, are you there?
He's out hunting.
Yeah, I guess so. All right, call us back. Jack from Madison, hi.
Hi. Yes, I wanted to inquire about Edwards. I've always thought of John Edwards as the logical choice because of his good looks and his location from Carolina. And he seems to be articulate, and yet the electorate seems to reject him over and over. Is he washed up, and where will his people go?
Well, aside from the first part of your statement, which I'll leave to you about what his appeal may or may not be, washed up. I think that he's very unlikely to win any of these contests. I think that his presence in the race, certainly after South Carolina, is Hillary Clinton couldn't spend money effectively as keeping John Edwards in the race, because he takes votes from Obama, and because his supporters, I think, are more likely to go to Obama, and I think it's a problem for Obama, and he seems determined to go on, and I think one of the problems, back to reading body language, but and anecdotal evidence, I think that there are an awful lot of people who have found him to be repetitive and self-righteous in ways that he's got to find a way to change his message a little bit. He has some real strong support, particularly in the left of the Democratic Party. He's kind of 21st century populist in some ways, but I can't see him going the distance, especially after the way this race has been framed now between Hillary Clinton and Obama.
Right. Yeah. Let me. You said something real interesting earlier when you said if people had read a good biography of Bush, they probably would not have voted for him. Well, what do you think? If people read.
No, I said I don't think
he wouldn't have become president. Right.
But he still would have got a lot of votes.
But what about if people have read your book and perhaps another good biography of Hillary Clinton, they are more likely to vote for her, less likely to vote for her?
No, I think what would happen is that they would start to understand, as the reviews indicate, who this person is. And they then could bring their own values intelligently to making a decision. The problem about Hillary Clinton, she rightly says, look, I'm a mystery to people. Well, that's partly of her own making. It's largely because what we know about Hillary Clinton has been caricature, and it's caricature that's been promulgated on the one hand by her enemies and her opponents, and on the other hand by acolytes and true believers. And she hasn't helped the record much herself in her own writing and autobiographical references because of her tendency to obfuscate and omit and avoid, often for very human reasons. But the real story of her life is to understand her values and to understand who she is. And so I think that it's not about whether, you know, the reviews seem to think that the book is empathic, sympathetic, and at the same time, as many of them said, very tough in terms of, look, you're talking about somebody who followed Bill Clinton to Arkansas, recognized immediately that, to use her term, his sexual compulsions would make him not viable as a politician, even though he was the most talented politician of his generation, probably. So she took it upon herself, and this is a part of the story. She, not Bill Clinton, took it upon herself to hide and obscure the fallout and contain the effects of his sexual compulsions.
Mm-hmm.
And in so doing, she had lawyers hired, detectives hired. At one point, she and her law partners represented five women who were purported to have had affairs with Bill Clinton. She interrogated one of them herself. And so you have to start to ask, you know, emotionally, what does that start to do to somebody? As the book says, quoting people in the White House, she was a very angry woman when she got there in many regards.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you got to look at the story of somebody's life, and this is one hell of a story.
Yeah, you're right. It is.
And also her, you know, look, she, her childhood, you know,
her dad,
her father was a sour, unfulfilled man who humiliated verbally and abused verbally, Hillary's mother. People who came into that house wondered, you know, well, why did her mother stay in this marriage? Why did she, you know, you don't have to be the Soprano family shrink at a certain point to say, oh, there's something going on here. And in fact, you know, I didn't even realize myself until I read the book afterwards. And, you know, Joan Didion has this wonderful thing that she says about writers' right to find out what they believe, and reporters do the same thing. And when I read the narrative over, I started to recognize how fear of shame and humiliation have figured so prominently as a theme in Hillary Clinton's life, even in some ways coming out of Iowa, perhaps.
Hmm. One more phone call, then we go to the Republicans. Scott from Green Bay, I think, is back. Hi, Scott.
Hi, how are you?
All right, fine. How are you?
Did you shoot anything up there?
Yeah, where were you, Scott?
The road.
Oh, okay.
The phone.
All right.
People made a big deal out of Hillary Clinton getting emotional at a speech a couple of days ago, which I just kind of thought was somewhat foolish that it was the lead story. It seems to be on every news channel. But the thing that intrigued me more than anything else, and I'm trying to understand her thought process, is she got emotional because she actually believes that without her in the White House, we as a nation have a potential for failure. And I'm wondering where that, and I don't mean this negatively, the only word I can think of is arrogance come from, because...
Well, I think you're on to something. I mean, I think that one of the things that has been difficult for her in this campaign is this perception that many people have gotten that this is about me, this is about us, and Obama very obviously has been going the opposite way. And then last night you saw Hillary Clinton give a speech that changed direction and went the same way Obama's
been going.
It sure did.
Yes, very interesting.
So I think she's sort of figured this out belatedly. But you're not wrong that there is a, you know, the keys to understanding Hillary Clinton to some extent are that the pillars of her life have always been religion and family. Strange as that might sound, when you read the story of her life, you see how those two elements hold everything up and always have, going back to childhood. And in the White House, people found that a self-righteousness that came in an almost messianic sense, some people found it came from her religiosity, in the sense of being convinced that she was right, and that her way, it's about right and wrong. And, you know, Bill Clinton was saying much the same thing. And I think it's part of what got them into such deep trouble in Iowa is that, you know, where was to talk about the country? Where was to talk about a vision for the country when so much of it was negative about the other candidate and about this experience that she has and how essential it was to have that experience brought into this campaign. I don't think you're wrong. It's a good observation.
Yeah. So what are you going to be looking for in South Carolina and on February 5? What should we be paying attention to?
You were going to ask me about the Republicans.
We have a Republican analyst we have to go to. But tell us what you think about the Republicans.
The Republicans.
Sure.
Because I think that the fact that that McCain is in a powerful position now makes is a whole other dynamic that we need to look at here, because what McCain represents for Democrats, many as well as Republicans, whether they hate him on the war or not, though, is a kind of integrity, a kind of straightforwardness, straight shooting, straight talking, that sometimes does not compare well with perceptions of Hillary Clinton. You know, one of the things I say in this book in the end of the narrative, and part of the book is about understanding why she is the way she is, but I say Hillary Clinton is someone who has had a difficult relationship to the truth. And not necessarily different than other politicians in some ways, but she's always asked to be judged by different and better standards than we judge other conventional politicians. And she's been the subject of an out-of-control special prosecutor. She's been vilified. And so that in response... you begin to understand why she answers some of the assertions about her with the kind of slick response that doesn't speak to candor and straightforwardness very often. But whatever the case, she does have this difficulty through her public life. And one of the things that we see with Romney, I have never... And this is not hyperbole. It's factual. I have never seen a major presidential candidate say so many things at odds with what he has said in the past and done in the past, and been so all over the map in terms of obviously saying almost anything to appeal to this or that constituency. It's quite extraordinary, and I think it undid him.
Yeah.
I mean, to talk about pandering.
Mm-hmm.
So,
thank you, Carl. We'll talk to you again. Thanks again.
Okay.
Carl Bernstein, his book is A Woman in Charge. It has just been released in paperback with an afterword that looks at more at the 2008 presidential race. He, of course, of Watergate fame, the author of a number of other books. We're going to speak with the executive editor of the American Spectator to talk about the McCain win yesterday and to see what this does to Romney and where Republicans are going. What's going to happen with this race, too? What a year, huh? Quinn Hillier joining us in a moment. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We're talking about the results of New Hampshire, perhaps. No real surprises on the Republican side. The polls seemed to be right on there. It was the Democratic side where everybody was so off. John McCain, the very clear winner here, and we'll be talking about why that was the case in New Hampshire, what it does to Mitt Romney's campaign to have lost two in a row. How does he keep going on from here? And the fact that there a clear front runner now in the Republican race? Huckabee coming in a fairly strong third. He'll be strong in the state of South Carolina. So we'll do an analysis of what's happening with the Republicans on the remaining time in our program as soon as we track down our guest here. And welcoming more of your phone calls. The number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. If you're joining us in Milwaukee, the Milwaukee line is 414-227-2050, 414-227-2050. Oh, he's not answering. Oh, well, let's just take phone calls then. Sorry. Mike Appleton will still try to reach the editor of the American Spectator. Hi. Go ahead, Mike. We'll try and track him down here. I think your question was about the Democratic side, but go right ahead.
Yeah, it really was. And with regards to Hillary Clinton, I really don't have a problem with her. My concern is how much influence is he going to have? Because I really don't like him. I'm a conservative. I've always voted Republican, but I think that we're really in a critical stage countrywide as far as, you know, international economy, and this is a real important choice we're going to make, and I'm inclined to vote for her, but my problem is him.
Mm-hmm.
And how much influence is he going to have on her.
Mm-hmm. What do you think of McCain?
I like John McCain a lot, except for his stand on immigration. I think he's misguided there. I don't know. it's because of his stand with immigration, it pushes me more towards Romney, which, you know, may not be the best choice. But I guess what I'm saying is that we as citizens, this time around, we've really got to look very carefully at who we're going to elect, and, you know, because this is going to decide the course of the country for the next, you know, foreseeable future, and it's a real, real important decision.
Mm-hmm. What did you make of Bernstein's comments about Romney? And I'm wondering what you think is going to happen with Romney down the road here, that he has said so many things and has literally changed positions on so many things that he's coming across as not terribly genuine. And it seems to me as though he's in trouble.
I don't know. It seems to me that probably all of the politicians, you know, do that a bit, some more than others. What I'm trying to do is I'm trying to get to the character of the person, whoever it is, Romney, Huckabee, Obama. What I don't want to do with my vote is I don't want to waste it on voting for a superstar. That's not what we need right now. We need somebody who's really, really serious about this and is serious about the country and the path that we're going to take. It's a critical time.
Yeah, and who are the superstars?
Oh, I think the media has pumped up Obama tremendously. I mean, he's very nice. He's very personable. He's a terrific speech giver. But, you know, is he the guy? You know, I don't know. I'm really lost.
Mm-hmm.
As a voter, you know, I'm, like I said before, I'm 100% Republican, but I realize that this is really, really, mm-hmm. you know, it's a critical time, so we got to choose the right person, whoever it is.
All right. Thanks, Mike.
Yep.
Thanks for your call. Dave is next from Menominee, Michigan. Hi, Dave.
Hi. Good morning.
Hi.
Boy, I wish the guest was there.
Yeah, we would have kept Bernstein longer. I mean, he was available.
Yeah. Well, here is my take on it. And, this is the way I felt as soon as I heard Iranian gunships were swarming three of our, and they were telling us we're going to blow up. But we don't fire on them. We just have this conversation with them over the radios. If you've seen the news clips and they show this video of this so-called threatening attack, coincidentally, just, you know, a day and a half before the caucuses, and I think a lot...
Before the New Hampshire, you mean? Before the primary?
For the primary, mm-hmm. That's right, New Hampshire. A lot of independents went to McCain and Hillary because of what I think is Pentagon force-fed propaganda. I didn't believe the story to begin with. Nobody is talking about this. Nobody is saying, I wonder if that threat had an effect on how people are going to choose. And I just can't believe it's not a subject, you know, that people are talking about.
No, I haven't heard that discussed very much either. So you're saying that who would want to see a win by Hillary and McCain?
Well, I think that the whip of fear was cracked, and people just swayed, probably more to McCain than to Hillary. I've said on this show years ago that this administration is going to use anything they can to try to make sure we want a hawk to replace the administration that's in now.
Thanks, Dave, for your call.
You're welcome.
Gloria is next from Madison. Hi, Gloria.
Hi, great show. I actually wanted to comment a little bit about the idea of reading a biography.
Mm-hmm.
I actually have read a lot of the supposed autobiographies of the various candidates.
Mm-hmm.
And even though they're self-serving, I mean, you know, they're not going to put negative things in there, you can really tease out a lot about the candidates from reading both their autobiography and other people's biographies. For example, I read John McCain's. Before I read it, I thought, oh, you know, here's somebody, you know, kind of a maverick, you know, who might be interesting. And it was all military. I mean, it was much about, you know, there was nothing in it about domestic concerns. And then it reminded me that he was one of the Keating Five who were named, you know, way back when for possibly taking money, you know, in the savings and loan scandals. And I thought, oh, I totally forgot about that. I also read Hillary's, not all of it, some of it, because I got tired of it. And, and I read the first volume of Bill Clinton's. And in Hillary's, Bill Clinton seemed to be all about the people. You know, I met this person, he stuck with me, he ended up in the cabinet, whatever. Hers, it seemed to me, was very defensive. It was sort of designed to explain away all the negative things, you know, and that it seemed... you know, it was really a kind of, you know, a justification. And I read both of Obama's.
Goodness!
And some of these I you know, get on CD so you can listen to when you're driving or whatever.
Uh-huh.
And his first book, I think it's Dreams of My Father, was amazing. It was not...
I agree. It was a very lovely book.
It was... Mm-hmm. I think it would stand as literature.
Mm-hmm.
And it was honest, I think. It was, this is my struggle, you know, my struggle to find my identity.
Mm-hmm.
The second one pretty much lays out what his core priorities are and what he sees that we need to do. And I also think that it shows a lot of thought. He's a very, very intelligent person, and he really gets it about the things that need to change in this country, and that's what convinced me to be an Obama supporter.
Mm. So what did you think of what happened in New Hampshire?
Well, I think it was probably, you know, part of it I think was women saying, you know, it is an opportunity for women. I think another part of it is I don't think people wanted it to be over. And
oh, that's
you know,
interesting.
A lot of people were saying, you know, this is it. And I think, you know, I have to say one other thing, and that is I don't believe much in pundits anymore, because I can remember back in the first Bush era, and I remember Cokie Roberts on NPR saying that George Bush was unbeatable because he was so presidential after the Gulf War. And I thought to myself, you need to get out to the countryside more, because that's not the issue. And so, you know, you have to take, I'm a political junkie, but you have to take it all with a grain of salt. But I think people felt, you know, I don't think it was, you know, enough. I think we want to know more. We want now to see the candidates want, you know, more one-on-one now that the field is narrowed. I think it may be some of that. I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Well, you sure are informed.
Well, I was going to say one other thing, too. I watched the debate, the New Hampshire debate on, I think it was Sunday, or Saturday, I guess it was.
Yes, we did,
I didn't see all of it because I was exercising, and I missed some of it. But it seemed to me that we were in two different worlds between the Republican debate and the Democratic debate. Totally different issues, totally different approach to, you know, to the problems.
Mm-hmm.
And a gentleman called in the other day and said that John Edwards won, and I think he was best as a debater. But I think the other message that people are responding to came both from Obama and Richardson, which is, let's try to work together.
All right, we have our other guest now, so we're going to go quickly to him. Gloria, thank you so much for your call.
Okay.
Yeah, people ought to have coffee with you so you can tell them about all these candidates. You've read all the books. The executive editor of the American Spectator is with us now, Quinn Hillier, to talk about the Republican race. Hello, Quinn. Thanks for being with us. Your comments on the McCain win last night, a good solid win on the part of McCain. What do you make of it?
I think New Hampshireites have proven that they really like John McCain. It's the second straight time that they've done this. The difference is this time McCain is not going against somebody who has all sorts of entrenched advantages like George Bush did. There is no establishment candidate, and so... McCain might be able to carry it forth this time, whereas last time he ran into a buzzsaw in South Carolina.
Mm-hmm. Do you have a candidate that you're particularly fond of, Quinn?
If I had to vote today, I would probably vote for Fred Thompson. But I have had very good words for Thompson, Romney, Giuliani, and Duncan Hunter. All four of them have many good selling points.
What about Huckabee?
I have probably been Huckabee's foremost critic in the whole country. I think the first one in any kind of national publication to do a piece strongly outlining his deficiencies even before he really made his move in the polls.
Mm-hmm.
I covered him when I was in Arkansas. I was an editorial writer for the Arkansas Democrat Gazette, and I was appalled by his continuing ethical lapses and by his bizarre habit of issuing just hundreds and hundreds of executive clemencies, including to some quite violent characters.
Mm-hmm. Do you have a sense of where South Carolina, though, is going to go? It seems as though the Republicans, that there's no real clear front runner. This could go on for a long time. Are you getting that sense?
Well, yes, I am, and not to cite myself again, but last February I actually wrote a column saying that this race was shaping up as one that to me seemed quite likely to be the first one since 1976. That could go all the way to the convention without a clear winner.
Isn't that something?
And I still think that is very much a possibility.
Some of what was being discussed last night was that maybe somebody else is going to enter the Republican race.
The one person who would have the wherewithal to do so on short notice would be Jeb Bush. I also put that in my column last February that if anybody would enter late, it would be Jeb.
What do you think of that?
I've got mixed feelings. He certainly was a good governor of Florida. Of course, his name might be at least as much of a disadvantage right now as an advantage. He has actually, frankly, a better record as governor by far than his brother, the now president, did as governor of Texas.
Thanks, Quinn, very much for being with us. Quinn Hillier, the executive editor of the American Spectator, talking. We couldn't track him down earlier, talking about the Republican race in New Hampshire last night. Thanks, everybody, for all of your calls. We could go hours on this because you're so politically astute and aware and involved. But we're going to move on and talk about environmental issues and what's happening to winters around the country. Are they becoming warmer, and is it indeed a sign of global warming? We thank Carl Bernstein for being with us, and Quinn Hillier as well. Thanks to Rhonda Fanning for being our producer and lining up all of these political programs. And we'll welcome more discussions as we continue here. We'll be right on top of the situation, I can assure you of that. I'm Kathleen Dunn. We have news coming up from National Public Radio, and we'll return with more Wednesday conversation. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.